Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, faithful followers. This is your old pal, Brother Jack Angry, bringing you another edition of Live from the Monastery of Mayhem. Our guest today is Stephanie Beaton. She should be on the line with us right now. Are you there, Stephanie?
I am.
Okay, and great. So I wanted to take a moment to throw out some shout-outs to some good friends of ours. I also want to dedicate this show to Rhonda Baffis, a.k.a. Mistress Rhonda, of Bizarre TV, whom we lost, unfortunately, due to cancer this past winter. So this one's for you, Rhonda, and I want to throw a big shout-out to Shockworks TV, where the Angry Brothers Omaha Shockorama will soon be playing. And how are you doing, Stephanie?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in. We should have some other people calling in just a few minutes here. I'm just going to send a couple of quick messages.
Sweet.
And
thank you for having me
getting,
on.
Oh, well, certainly it's a pleasure, or always a pleasure to have you. Now, I've been looking at going over some of your credits on IMDb and a few other places.
Mm-hmm.
Just to let you know, now you've started this in you started acting in, well, your first role looks like it was in 1996 in a movie called Unnaturally Born Killers. What was that like
Correct.
For you?
That was pretty crazy. That was pretty wild. That was my first experience like in the horror genre, and you know, when you're young, you just kind of like, you do whatever it takes to make yourself crying. So I remember the death scene when I was being tortured. I made sure I brought some onions with me. So I diced up the onions and I literally put the onions in my eyes to make my eyes all bloodshot and red and all that stuff. Yeah, it was a low budget, ultra low budget film. So they didn't have things to put in your eyes like glycerin or anything. But I wanted to make it real, so I'm jamming the onions in my eyes. So it was pretty wild, but it was great people to work with. Long days, you know, typical for low-budget films, but it was amazing. And from that moment on, it just took off.
Okay, and so what was you worked in the late 1990s and early 2000s as a we'll use the phrase scream queen. So what was that like?
Yeah.
What was Hollywood like at that time for you?
It was good. I mean, it wasn't really much any difference from today versus then. You know, I know a lot of people and the industry and even like the stuff that's going on today and you know, there is there's truth to it, but there's also backstory to all like the stuff going on. You know, people in the bigger scenes and even in low budget, but definitely in the bigger films, especially with all the Miramax. They, let's just say the women, and not all of it was just forced. Some people volunteered to get the roles. You know, they did whatever it took to get the role that they got and to get somebody else out of the way. So, you know, some of it you hear it's like it's truth, but then I also know a lot of the backstories too. But Hollywood today versus then, I think it was maybe easier. You know, I don't know. I've been kind of out of the loop. Like life totally changed a little bit. Took different directions after my mother had passed away. So I ended up getting away from it, but now I'm starting to get back into it again. And it still feels good. Doesn't feel anything bad or seedy or anything.
Okay, well that's great. So now you came from the same vintage as scream queens like Brink Stevens, Michelle Bauer, and Linnea Quigley. Did you ever get the chance to work with any of those people?
No, I actually kind of came after them. They had their time frame a little bit before me in their films, and so I came into the picture a little bit after. So no, I never got the opportunity to work with them. I am certainly sure we have been at the same conventions together, But I have not worked with them in a picture.
Okay. So, what do you think? Let me ask you, what do you think was the hardest thing that you had to overcome being a scream queen or an actress in Hollywood at that time?
Just basically, I think, like, your acting ability versus you just being naked in a magazine. So, like, being taken seriously, you know, that's one thing that was kind of a pet peeve for me was, like, you see these up-and-coming scream queens, and you're a scream queen because you're in one of the horror magazines, and, you know, you're half-naked or completely naked, and you've done, like, two films, and that's considered a scream queen. So I think that, you know, just being taken seriously and just really, you know, not being seen for just the nudie chick in the book, you know, that is probably, I think, one of the harder things to overcome. But other than that, it was good.
Okay. All right, and we're just waiting on another caller here, our good friend Ashnam De Plume. Hopefully we'll be calling in shortly. But all right. So let me ask you now, what have you been doing lately? I mean, as far as any, have you got any new projects going?
Not lately, I don't, but I mean I've got a few people that have sent me some scripts, but I haven't locked myself in on anything at this moment. I had just moved back to California. I moved out of Los Angeles last year to become a tattoo artist, and that clearly didn't work out. Kind of got screwed over once I moved to Arizona for that, as far as, like, tattooing. So I was kind of completely venturing out of, you know, the acting realm, but getting into, like, still artistry and whatnot. But I'm back in LA, so now, you know, things are starting to come together. As I said, I do have a few scripts that have come to me, but I haven't locked myself into anything as of yet.
Okay, well, that's great. And it looks like we have another caller on the line from the 775. Ash, is that you?
Yes, ma'am. How you all doing, Brother Jack?
Oh, thank you. Stephanie, this is our good friend, author Ashnam De Plume. He's written several books featuring the Angry Brothers and incorporated us into his character's universe, the Shades of Grey universe. And Ash, did you have any questions for Stephanie?
Actually, I did. I was looking at your, I hope I say it right, on the IMDb thing, Internet. excuse me, got a little cough going here. and it shows that you are writing and you're directing and you're acting all at the same time. It sounds exhausting. I mean, I have enough trouble just trying to write and get something that doesn't sound like complete schlock and much less edit it. as far as that goes. Is it double expressive? I mean, how do you pull that off?
Well, you know, the directing and the producing, that actually came a little bit later, more in the, like, 2003, 2001, 2004, 2005. That actually came later. So I was, like, aggressively just doing the acting for the longest time in the 90s and the beginning of the 2000s. But then I just was in so many of these low-budget films, I'm thinking, you know what, if this guy could do it, I could do it. Why can't I do the same thing that this you know, yokel was doing? And that's how it all began.
Right.
And then I started doing it.
I was just asking the Sam that the doing it all, there are many great things done. Like, I'm a sci-fi fan, no kidding. Like you watch Star Trek, and many of the episodes are directed by the actors in there, but they usually tell the tale about just how physically exhausting it was, and that you're having to switch mental gears. How do you help yourself switch the mental gears? So, because at one point you have to tell yourself to be critical about your job, you know, act like this, I wouldn't listen to that. That's good, that's great. A little more of this, a little less of that, and a little to the left, please. And the other part where you're actually trying to pull it off, is there a trick that you have that allows you to do it, or is it just you make sure you don't have too many lines on that particular day?
Yeah, there's there's really no trick. It's a pain in the ass, I'm not gonna lie. Evil in the Bayou, that one was difficult, you know, to kind of like keep it together, and then you've got to, you know, you're dealing with the whole cast and the crew, and you're trying to, you know, do your scene and stuff, and sometimes you don't even remember, like, oh shit, I'm in the scene. Yeah, you don't even realize it. It's like, oh my god, I'm up, and then you're not prepared for it. You're like quickly going over your lines. Yeah, you don't know them, and you're doing them as quick as you possibly can, and then once you're done, so I try, if I end up directing something that I'm in, I certainly don't want to be a lot in the picture, because it is difficult. It is hard. And as you know, on set, anything can happen. Anything goes wrong. And most of the times, it always will. You know, there's always drama. There's always something that goes down. So, you know, you can't be in front of the camera trying to focus on your dialogue and, you know, turning around and trying to keep everybody together and holding the fort down without anybody walking off the set. So yes, I do prefer if I'm going to be directing something, if I'm going to put myself in it, which, you know, I kind of like, I'm not really big on that, and just kind of, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right to me. I just feel like, well, I've got to direct my own stuff to put myself out there. So I'd rather not be so much in the picture than in the picture, you know, while I'm directing.
So basically you wouldn't want to do both things, act and direct in a picture. You would want to kind of concentrate on one or the other.
Yeah, correct. It just feels better anyway. It really does.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, I've certainly done the special effects and been in a film, and they're like, oh, Stephanie, you want to do the special effects? Because, you know, I ended up learning how to do a lot of stuff throughout the years, and I love making corpses and props and stuff, and I'm totally old school. I'm not a big CGI fan. I really like the blood and the guts and just getting the animal parts and putting it together and, you know, making your own props. I really like that stuff.
Okay, well, all right, let me throw, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Ash.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, there's some things that you can do the easy and hard way, because, you know, I work in some technical fields, and sometimes, you know, people say, why do you do it the hard way? Because it's faster. It works. It's easier, actually. I know it.
Yeah, right.
You know, by the time I get through the power curve on the learning of this stuff, I could have already done it the other way. Now, if I was going to do it 300 times, I might do that. Or if you have like some sort of supernatural character, like you, a lot of stuff with ghosts and things like that, that very well may go easier with CGI.
Yeah,
but like
right,
I said,
right.
You know, some poor schmuck gets stabbed or shot, you know, it's probably just easier to go old school than that.
Right.
Well. Okay. Well, let me throw this out there to you, Stephanie. I'm looking at your page on the Fandom website, and mm-hmm. under the list of your movies, Zombie Ninja Gangbangers.
Mm-hmm.
That is just such a great title.
I can just take it the wrong way.
It was originally titled The Zombie Ninja, and then it became The Gangbangers when a different producer came on board. So he kind of changed the title.
You got to love them producers.
We're assuming drive-by sort of gang activity here, right?
The gang was the zombies.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I gotta go. Is this a family movie, or is this a different kind of family movie?
You know, it's rated R. You know, I've never done X-rated.
I've never done anything
X-rated, you know, so I've never crossed that line. I've kept it all pretty, you know, R-rated.
Yeah,
well, I mean, you can always do hard R.
Yeah, you could do hard R, but, you know, they probably don't pay that much.
These days, I kind of doubt it. I kind of doubt it.
No.
But I see this.
I know there's too many amateur volunteers on that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, like I said, you know, those days are behind me. But anyway, I mean, I'm also seeing that it looks like you did a series of films called Witchcraft. What can you tell us about those?
They were good. You know, I shot Witchcraft 9 in 1996. And then 10 was in London, and then 11 was actually shot in 60 millimeters. So the other ones were shot in video, but Witchcraft 11 was shot on with 60 millimeter with Ron Ford. And I've worked with Ron Ford several times. He's a great, great, great director. Great, great, great guy. If there's anybody you want to work with, shout out to Ron Ford for that one. Yeah, I mean, the Witchcraft movies, the character of Detective Lutz, it was good. I was hoping to, you know, go back into a few of the other ones, and I did get contacted to do so, but just the way they were handling the auditions at Starbucks and had to audition for the role of Detective Lutz, which I've played three times, I was just like, no, I'm not going to do it. So that's just why I'm not in any more of the Witchcraft movies. You know, I've been in three and didn't think I'd have to go back and audition to be in the same role again. But, yeah, it was good. Jerry Pfeiffer is a nice guy. You know, it was a good experience. And actually, I did that film right after I did A Naturally Born Killer, and I was doing some acting classes at the time. And right when I booked, because I booked the first film and then I booked the second film, which was Witchcraft 9, and I never returned to the acting classes because then everything just started opening up. I started getting, you know, appearing in the magazines, and then people were just, you know, directors were contacting me left and right, and I actually never auditioned again after that. I did a few auditions for, like, some bigger, for some bigger productions, but for the most part, directors would just contact me, and I ended up, you know, negotiating the script myself and not having an agent involved.
Okay.
I mean, not having an agent, has that been, not having an agent, has that been a benefit or just a money saver? I mean, because I'm told that sometimes they do a great job, and then sometimes you're like, you know, why did I give you the money? You know, not being an actor.
Yeah, correct. You know what? I fired my agent after, I think it was Ray Cavallari I was with, and you know, I ended up getting rid of him. And it wasn't a hardship at all. Trust me, I was booking more without him than I was with him, and I just feel like it was a hindrance because there's a lot of people that, you know, when you go and you end up on, he would send you out to something, and then you would end up booking the role, but then with him, he would kind of kill the deal. Like, he would, you know, want, of course, he's going to want his cut and his pay and all that stuff. But it ended up, I ended up getting rid of him, and not because of that, but just because it was, you know, Hollywood is kind of brutal. And at that time, the reason why I got rid of Ray, and he was a nice guy, but, you know, he was just, you know, your typical, the world of Hollywood. I had went from like 105 pounds to like 120, 125 pounds, and he was like, I can't send you out because everybody's going to know you as the fat girl. And I was like, Ray, like, my body was shutting down. My kidneys were shutting down. Like, are you serious? I've been, you know, starving myself. It's like, seriously, this is just not good. And you're not sending me out on anything anyway, so screw you. And that was it. And I haven't had an agent since. And I've dealt with it just fine. I negotiate my own deals and whatevers, and I get whatever I need. And if there's somebody that comes along and tries to screw you over, well, then you handle it. And handle it relatively quickly, and you get what you need.
Well, okay, let me...
Obviously, from the writing side, I understand about the agent being difficult, but I'm glad to hear that it's worked out well for you. Sorry,
yeah, yeah, it hasn't been hard.
105 pounds, 120 should not be enough to make anybody lose their mind. And 105 is the healthiest, but you're 5'8", right?
Yeah, I'm 5'8". So, yeah, but, you know, in Hollywood, you know, everybody looks...
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
You're okay.
You're going for the skeleton look? I mean, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah, I know. Well, you should see the men in the industry. You think the women are skinny? They're like short. They're like 5 foot. Just think, you know, my thigh is bigger than their ass. Like, really, I'll break you in half. Are you serious?
Well, that's a whole other genre of movie right there, you know.
Yeah,
but I'm sure there's guys that pay big money for that action. But speaking of the speaking of indie films here, Stephanie, where do you think where do you see the indie scene going? I mean, do you see it getting better or do you see it getting worse than when you were acting?
That's a good question because I haven't looked at a lot of independent films. I mean, as of the late, so I don't know. I mean, I've seen. Well, that's not true. I have looked at some stuff on YouTube that's out there, and you know, some of it's pretty interesting. I think that the independent scene is more acceptable now because everybody seems to be shooting on video, where before, when you were shooting on video, you know, when I would shoot my films and we would be shot on like a Canon XL1, you'd be doing everything in your power to make it look like 16mm. You would just be de-interlacing it, trying to do whatever it takes to make it look like film. But everybody is shooting on video, so I think it's the indie scene it's got a better shot. Although I do like the film look, I ain't gonna lie, I hate video look. I don't own a flat. I don't own any TV. But if I was gonna buy a TV, I will never buy a flat screen because it just looks like video, and I hate video. Hate video. Shoot on video, but I hate video.
I understand that, but you know, being as we, you know, our show, we shoot entirely on video. I mean, we do pretty much fixed mount photography, you know, high definition video, and we've had good luck with it. I wouldn't even know what to do with film if it jumped up and bit me, because of the fact that, you know, I'm so ingrained into video. I mean, and there are a lot of producers such as Beelzebub and a few others that do their work entirely on video, and that seems to be their whole bread and butter. But so
shot everything on video too, but I just, you know, de-interlaced it and made it look like a Super 16. You can tell Super 16 versus 16mm. You can see the big difference.
Okay.
So that was a deliberate artistic choice to make it, you know, do that, because, you know, some of your high definition video actually looks better than the old 16. So you actually were going for that look. Okay. Because I was going to ask you why you shot one of the films on 16mm when everything else is video. That's it. Was that an artistic choice or a technical choice? So artistic choice?
Well, everything that I shot through my company was always on video. It was always on like Canon XL1. I think I shot on a Sony 1000 once, but generally it was a Canon XL1, so it was completely video. I've certainly worked on projects and films that were 35 and 16mm, and that's just what, you know, I mean, these were money sets. These were big productions, you know, so I don't know if it was artistic, but they had, you know, main actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you see a large future for a lot of the indie movies on the horror? Because, like, I saw a movie the other day that I rewatch now and then, like The Man from Earth, which has nothing but big-name actors and all that stuff. But the whole scene was just done in one cabin. So, I mean, it was actually a movie that was qualified for – this movie can be done on a very reasonable budget because it was just the interaction of the characters. Do you see horror films being able to take advantage of – something like that with the minimal setting, you know, as far as that. I mean, there's always the Blair Witch Project, but do you see things like that happening, or do you think the desire for special effects and the desire for big budget movies is going to make that harder and harder to sell artistically?
No, I think it would do well. I mean, if coming from that perspective and that end, it's so much easier to keep everything in one location instead of like trying to make it like something bigger than what it's not. I mean, clearly we all want the money shots, you know, you want the cars rolling over, you want the action shots that's going to sell the picture and make it more of a bigger budgeted thing. But no, I think it's good for the indie horror film to, you know, to keep it all in one location. And I'm certainly sure, like you said, they could have did it for a way lower budget. But, of course, if they got big-name actors, everybody's demanding big money.
Yeah, I have no idea if they actually had done that, because I think they were all off of Friends, too. But, you know, one of those kind of things. Every now and then you hear about a story where, you know, friends got together to do a movie to help a buddy out, and it turned out to be pretty good. I think it was one called Drawing Down the Moon, was one with Walter Keenan or something that I heard about like that. That's vanished, and actually probably a good thing, because It looked like he had a nice script, and he did his part, but the others didn't do theirs. But that's,
oh,
I guess
wow.
that happens every year. Yeah, I mean, that's got to be
yeah.
frustrating to have, you know, have the other actors, you know, you did your part and you did it good, and then everybody else kind of, okay, that didn't work. Now how much of a hit am I about to take because the other guy didn't know his job? And do you have that fear in your line of work? Because, I mean, on the indie front, you're not exact, you know, there isn't the depth of money that you can take two or three hits like a Tom Cruise can on a couple of stalkers. You know, as long as he has one now and then that's good, he's okay. But, you know, you
right.
have a couple of stalkers. How close to the edge does the poor indie actor have to live on that? Or is it always on the edge?
It's always on the edge. You can't make a living as an indie actor.
Yeah.
Hence is why the like kind of life changed.
Yeah, I heard something about trying to do some tattoo work, and of course, that's a brutal industry too. I've known some people
yeah,
in that
it
business.
Is.
It's like that's a little rough, and of course, everybody thinks they're the better artist than the other one.
Oh,
and talk about egos.
Of course.
Talking about egos, I grew up actually near Hollywood, and said I've seen more egos in the tattoo business than I've seen in Hollywood. And that's saying something.
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, that's probably the reason why I ended up venturing out. But it was just a fluke that kind of happened with the tattoo. I ended up getting a tattoo from my artist, and then I ended up doing a tattoo on him first time. And he liked it. And he's like, if you live closer, you know, I'd bring you on as an apprentice. And, you know, I was kind of mulling it around because I was looking to move out of L.A. I was looking to get out of California. I was tired of just everything and just tired of being here. And Arizona was definitely not up my alley, like on my bucket list to move to. But that's where, of course, the artist was. It was in Arizona. And so I did. I went there and, well, I never heard from him or his wife again after that. So I kind of got dumped in a strange white trash redneck town that was full of meth, heroin, and alcohol, and a lot of bar fights, a lot of like drama.
Sounds
I've
like
never
a,
seen so much in 7 months in my entire life.
Sounds like Omaha.
And, and the heat. Let's not even get there with the heat. I mean, oh, Jesus, God. And it was just horrible. So I, you know, for the grace of God, I've got incredible friends who helped me get out of there and literally came and got me. Otherwise, I'm really not so sure I'd be here today. It was really a bad, 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 bad experience. So, yeah.
Well,
I'm back in California, and, you know, now the journey moves on.
So, what's your latest? You have a project going right now, don't you?
Do I have a what? I'm sorry?
I thought you said you had a project going. Or I heard a piece of something about the current project.
I don't have any projects. I've got some scripts that people have sent to me, but I haven't launched myself into any of them yet. You know, I don't know. You know, a couple of them are out of state, which is great. Most of the stuff I ever shot was actually out of state. It's like, why do I need to live in California? I don't, because I spent more time in the air flying to different locations than I did shooting anything here in Los Angeles.
Well, okay. Okay, guys, what's going to happen is in about 90 seconds, the stream is going to be cut off, but there should be like a 10 or a 15 minute after party, and we can just continue the conversation then. But Stephanie, we definitely want to have you back on future shows. Would you have a problem?
Great, well, thank you. No, I have absolutely no problem with that.
All right. Well, excellent. We'll definitely be having a Stephanie Beaton, part two and part three here, because we really, really love what you have to say here. And in case they do cut us off, I want to thank Stephanie Beaton for taking her time out of her day to give us a call and, you know, to let us talk with her. And Ash, we appreciate you giving us a call. Now you've got a new volume of the Angry Brothers leaked saga coming out here shortly. Is that right? Or
the fifth one should be hitting everything. I'm guessing mid August should be finished up as far as that goes. And of course, as you know, we already have six books with you in it, and your brother. You know, the Angry
yes.
Brothers as far as that. So yeah, the shameless plug there. Obviously, you know, your fans know how to get a hold of you to get a hold of reviewer copies and all that stuff. So they do that because you're rather generous to your fan page.
And that would Yes, that would be on our website at www.theangrybrothers.com. We've got about 4 seconds, so I'm going to just say thanks to everyone for calling in.
Well, thank you.
Are you guys there? Yeah,
I'm here.
Like they just, the stream just, yeah, Ash, you still with us?
Yeah, I am. How many times have I hung
okay,
up
good.
On you
this, No, the stream just cut us off, so we're in the after party right now. So, you know, that'll continue about, I think, another 10 or 15 minutes here. But, no, thank you so much, Stephanie, for calling in. And it was a great show. You did wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, so basically here, I guess, you know, what, you know, me and Ash were both curious about, the mm-hmm. indie film industry, particularly the horror genre. So you don't think that somebody can make a sustained living off of that? You have to have other projects or maybe a day job or something like that?
Yeah, I would say so. Unless you're really, like, you know, got a name, you know, somebody like Joe Estevez that I actually had in one of my films, he can make it because, you know, I mean, he's got, you know, Martin Sheen's brother. so there you go. And I paid him very well to have him in Her Kalak, which was in Tales from the Grave, the first one. So I paid mm-hmm. him very well for 2 days worth of work. But, you know, I mean, if he's getting that kind of money that I paid him and he's working several times a month, yeah, he can do very well for himself, which I think he does. But, you know, you got to be consistently working. And, you know, the economy hit hard and things changed in the industry. And a lot of people, you know, lost everything and they couldn't shoot. And, you know, you kind of got to take that day job.
Okay.
How do you raise, you know, and of course, as you mentioned, money's tight and times are hard. How do you, without giving away the secrets of your industry, just... is it that difficult, or do you have a couple of places that you can go to get the initial funding for these kind of things? Because you do usually need one or two named people, but, you know, that's $10,000-$20,000 for a day's work that you need. You know, you got to have that $10,000-$20,000.
I tried that attempt at first to try to get funding, but I quickly realized that being a woman and trying to be in the industry is kind of null and void, and most people don't take you very seriously. So I financed all my own films. I said, screw it. You know what? I did very well when I was, you know, doing the internet gamut, and I had the funds and I could do it.
Well, how do you feel about crowdfunding?
About what funding? Crowdfunding? What is that?
Crowdfunding, like Indiegogo or GoFundMe.com, that kind of thing.
I think it's great, but I wouldn't put everybody down as a producer. That pisses me off. That is one thing, because I know so many people that do that. There's another website, not GoFundMe. It's something else. Where, oh, if you donate $100, we'll put your name down as a producer. I hate that. It's like, no. What are you going to make? Like, you know, the return. Oh, God. No, I used to work for a scam company. I'm sorry?
Was it 45-minute film and 90 minutes of credits in order to work for the producer?
Yeah, exactly. I used to work for a scam company called Avalon Family Films. It was they sold units, and the units were $25,000, and you'd cold call across the United States, and I was one of the idiots that would cold call, and I hate telemarketing. Anyways, so the guy who did own the company, he did make a movie, Hansel and Gretel. What I found was, like, when I would be cold calling to do Jack and the Beanstalk, these people wanted to kill him because they never got their RTO. They never got their rate of return and all this stuff. So he screwed everybody over. And I'm talking, like, people were investing, like, four units, $100,000. You know, and there I, you know, if I got the sale, I'd make 1% of that. So you get $1,000. If you got 25,000 one unit, that was, you know, you made $250. But Gary was just pocketing all this money, and nobody got their money back. It's total scam. Just total scam. I'm just like, you know what, just do it yourself. If you can mess up the money, just do it yourself. I don't know. I didn't like doing that job because it was just scamming, like, mom, pa. Like, you know, I don't know. shops and stores and whatevers, and people believed that they were going to be make it big in Hollywood and be part of the film, and it was all a lie. And they made the movie. It was Dakota Fanning was in the other one, but they screwed everybody over.
Yeah, you hear about that. Of course, that makes it harder for the guy who wants to come into the business, as far as that goes, and do that.
Right.
Somebody might have a reasonable production movie, great script, great this and that, and
mm-hmm.
you can't get it together. It's frustrating like that.
Yeah, it is. It just gives it all a bad name. And, yeah, he certainly made the movie. He certainly had the big-name stars. But in the end, everybody just got screwed over. Everybody that invested. And people invested a lot of money. Wasn't like a little independent film. It was a major motion picture in the theater.
Yeah, so do you see it getting better for women in Hollywood? People not taking care of it. Seriously, my mother is a journalist with Billboard Forever, and I remember everybody giving her the jaundiced look, even though she got Pulitzer nominations. It's like, excuse me, this is what the good stuff looks like. The fact that it's female doesn't
right.
mean it's not the good stuff. Or is it just all off?
I think it's getting better. I really do. I think times have changed. I think women have really come into the scene more, and I think it's better. I still wouldn't go out and try to hustle my own hustle, but I think it's hard, and you feel like you're just beating a dead horse. But I think it's definitely better for women now. They're more respected.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Like I said, I remember Lucille Ball, who was a brilliant actress and writer and everything else, but she was considered one of the biggest bees in Hollywood. And when you look at any of her behavior, it was perfectly reasonable things she said in perfectly reasonable tones, but the fact that she was a female just made it absolutely horrific. Because I watched her politely ask somebody to do their job as an 8-year-old. And I'm 8 years old, and from an 8-year-old's point of view, it seemed like a perfectly reasonable thing to do, and this person completely lost it with her. And it's like, oh. I love the class act she did for how to handle it. I mean, she handled it with class, dignity, and grace, which you don't see a lot of. But I just didn't know if it was getting any better. So yeah, sounds like
I think it's definitely getting better. Definitely.
Well, all right. Here. Okay. Well, actually, that's great, Stephanie. I mean. So do you see yourself coming? Do you see yourself going back anytime soon to do any projects, or are you just kind of going to just concentrate? Okay, good. Because we'd love to see you back here. I mean, if we could get you to Omaha, we'd definitely put you on our show. I mean, basically, with our show, it's just you stand around, look pretty, and drink all the time.
Don't tempt me.
Well, you've always got a place. Anytime, if you ever come through this area, we'll get you on for several shows, and whatever your adult beverage of choice is, we'll have plenty of it on hand.
Nice, thank you.
Yeah, we're afraid we're kind of on the liquor budget on our productions there. I'm on coffee. See, I'm just a writer. I can cover coffee, maybe two by three.
Well, it's like,
Starbucks.
Yeah, like I said, yeah. Starbucks. Oh, you want scale. Oh, okay.
No, I don't like Starbucks. I don't like that. I'm for the little guy. I make my own coffee. I drink U-Pan.
I don't like Starbucks.
Yeah,
see, from my point of view, buying a cup of coffee at Starbucks is paying full scale.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. Yeah. You're spending all that money for a cup of coffee. No.
Yeah, it's that you're paying for that name on the cup, more than anything else, because the coffee all comes from the same place.
Right. But
you know what?
Starbucks coffee isn't that good. It is. And it stinks like rotten milk every time you walk into one of the Starbucks.
Yeah.
And I often wonder if that isn't the customers, but sometimes, where I do a lot of my work, at a techno library here in Omaha, and there's a Starbucks, or not a Starbucks, but a Dunkin' Donuts attached to the premises. So it's like I'm always, going there and buy a large or extra large coffee or something like that. It's like,
So you're buying into the name. Oh.
Well, it's no, I'm buying into the fact that I don't have to walk very far to get it.
Oh, my God. Why don't you make coffee at home and take it with you?
No, that's too much work.
That's too much work, yes. God forbid.
I'm fundamentally lazy.
Well,
and I'm proud enough to admit that.
I've seen the number of hours you put into editing. You're not really fundamentally lazy. You just don't want to be digging ditches for a living.
That's it, you know. They say the world needs ditch diggers, but not this one. No. I would rather basically take what I did love doing and parlay it into something that pays me a decent wage, and that way my idea of work would be getting out of bed in my robe and bunny slippers, sitting down at my computer, working a couple hours, and then just going and doing what I want the rest of the day. That's my
goal. That's the ideal dream job.
Yeah.
Problem is, every time I attempt to do that 2 hours at the computer, and I look up, and it's you know, 2 chapters and 20 hours later.
Oh, my God.
Well, I've done that a couple of times where my wife is sitting there looking at me going, you know, how far did you get? And I said, oh, you know, 35,000 words today.
Oh, she goes, nice.
And she goes,
you know,
you
I don't think I'm thinking
Monday. She said, tomorrow's Monday, and you have to teach. Get your butt up. Oh, that's a great homework, wasn't that?
Yeah. Well, all right, guys, they're gonna cut us off in about 2 minutes here, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to wrap everything up. But, Stephanie, you were wonderful. Thank you so much for calling in, and we're definitely going to get you back on here in the next couple of weeks here. I'll coordinate with Lee, and we'll talk. We've got a couple of things that, you know, we want to talk to you about. And, Ash, we definitely want to have you on the next show as well. But
yeah, sure,
you guys did really.
Let me know what you got going on some of the stuff you're doing, because I have a tendency, with people's permission, to throw them in the books as cameos and this and that as their characters.
Oh, sweet.
So if you are ever doing one of your detective horror movie things where you have a character and you have permission, I can always slide it in there as background.
Oh, sweet.
Because usually not through stories, but I've been known to do that, just where you have somebody making a cameo. Of course, I'm the guy that writes things like when somebody makes a Star Trek quote, and you go, Star Trek quotes before 10 a.m., foul, you're buying lunch.
Yeah. Okay, sweet. Sweet. Do you ever create, or is it just something that's already done? Do you ever create the character for that individual, or is it something that's already created?
No, 99% of my stuff is created. I created it.
Okay.
No, I do original work. I mean, Jack Angry obviously was existing to come in, and then I have to send him copies of everything I do, say, okay, is this your character, so I stay true to you, but I'm writing all this stuff. But no, the stories and all that stuff, in fact, we'll hook you up with some copies, with the exception of, like, Jack Angry. That came out of my system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Mike Ash just incorporated us into his character's universe, so he creates all of his stuff.
Oh, very cool.
If you don't have a problem with an e-book, because I can ship that affordably, I can send you all kinds of stuff. Do you like murder mysteries? Do you like psychics? Do you like telekinesis? Do you like horrific murders? I mean,
I like everything. I'm open to everything.
Yeah.
Well, I'll send Steph.
Some of our books make a decent movie on low budget, but as you said, you can't even sell it when you know it there.
I'll send Stephanie the link to the free book off the website, and she can take a look at that. And, you know, just you get me the links, and I'll send them to her. I'll make sure she gets them.
Okay, I can send this to you, but yeah, I'd be happy to do that as far as that goes. But yeah, send her the whole collection, not a problem. If she goes to trouble with getting a show, she can have a whole copy of the collection. It's not like the electronic.
Well, exactly.
Extra
just electronic, it's not her copy.
Yeah.
Well, guys, they're going to cut us off in about 10 seconds here.
Well, you better be a fan for those. I'll get that to Jack, and then you get that to you. No problem.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, and they're going to be cutting us off in just a second here, but you guys did wonderful.
Thank you.
Happy to help out.
All right. All right. Thanks,
all right.
guys.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.